Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome back to Front Page Dub. I know it has been a bit of a break, and I do apologize for dying off a little bit at the end of last season. Unfortunately, mine and Matt's schedules got a bit the better of us, but your favorite duo is back for the new A-League season, even if it is a little later. No preseason episode, but two very, very good and very entertaining rounds to get through. One half of the duo is running late, unfortunately, but we are joined by a new co-host that we brought in for the Front Page Dub podcast this year. We are expanding our team. It won't just be the same two barren voices that you hear all the time. We are upgrading, I guess you can say, in a way. We actually want to expand. And for the first time, we've got a hopefully consistent female voice on the pod. Annabelle Banfield, you've probably seen her commentating various games around the NPL in New South Wales. I'd argue it's quite a coup for Front Page football. Christian, make sure you remember that. You're welcome. But anyway, Annabelle, first of all, welcome to Front Page Football. This is your first action, obviously, for us. But
first action.
How are you doing?
Thank you for having me. It's really exciting to be part of this. And I've been doing a lot of, you know, NPL New South Wales stuff this year, but to kind of dip my toe into the national side of things.
So always nice to get that little bit of a, do you want to call it a promotion? Like, I don't want to be disrespectful to football in New South Wales. I mean, the work that you're doing with them is probably a little bit higher level and maybe end up being a higher standard than what you'll get here. But obviously, yeah, it is a little bit of fun to talk about the National League and talk about the equal greatest league in the world. I'd argue that both our Australian National Leagues are up there together. The peak A-League, as you get, I don't think it can be beaten. And I guess if you want to talk about peak A-League women's, just before we get started into what actually happened in the league, Annalie Longo's dog, her performance. What did you make of that whole situation?
You've got to talk about that when you talk about best league in the world, because not many other leagues are getting dogs running on the field. And I mean, yeah, it was just funny because it lasted so long and all the players were
down. That's what I was thinking. Everyone was kind of standing around looking around like, do we get it? Do we grab it? Do we run towards it? Like, they're in such a big field. Like, if you start chasing it, it's just going to run.
Yeah, and four legs are faster than two. That dog was, you know, going to run faster than the rest of the players. So, I don't know. It took a while. And to be honest, it kind of highlights that some of the fields that we play on in the A-League Women's, you know, could be better, could have better security, you know, a bit more dog-proof perhaps. But, you know,
that's maybe a proper topic fence for running around the stadium as a start.
You know, perhaps.
I actually don't know how. Like, they haven't said anything about how the dog actually got on the pitch, which is probably just as
hilarious.
You can
see in the background, like, it's just a little metal bar. Like, dog could just run under there. It looks like a very almost suburban ground. So,
well, unfortunately, that's where most A-League women's games are played. Shout out Wanderers Football Park. As much as the heat absolutely kills me.
But at least it's got a bit of a fence. At least it's got a bit of a real fence.
It does.
You have to jump, at least.
Unfortunately, what it doesn't have is shade when I don't want to sweat like a pig in 40-degree heat when I'm trying to work. That's probably one criticism I have of that place. And when they don't actually have the canteen open, I'm not going to lie. It's only happened twice, but it is weird that it's happened twice.
And yeah, you're right. It's hot out there. I've played a few games out there myself, and it is not comfortable.
There we go. We got Annabelle flexing that she's played at Wanderers Football Park 2 minutes into.
Not against the Wanderers or anything.
Debut.
Against Marconi, but still.
Hey, that's better than any football pitch I've ever gotten on in my life. But anyway, let's actually get into the football and I guess what's occurred over the last 2 weeks. There has been a fortnight of results, and some of them absolutely, I guess, nuts. Like, it does happen a lot with the A-League Women's. It's probably the hardest league to predict in the world. But even then, some of the results, I'm sure some of these have taken you by surprise. We'll run through them quickly. Western United 4-2 against Wellington Phoenix to open up the 2024-2025 A-League Women's campaign. The next day, Mariners, and probably there we go, a shot to start us off already, beating Sydney FC 3-1, Canberra getting a 3-2 win over Brisbane Roar at home, and Melbourne Victory, a hard-fought win against Adelaide, which may have taken people by surprise, 3-2. Melbourne City coming from behind to beat Perth Glory 5-2. If you heard that scoreline on its own, I'm sure that part will be a shock for you. Ending round one, Newcastle Jets a 2-2 draw with Wanderers, and going into round two, West United a 0-0 draw with Mariners in Tane. Melbourne City coming away, Derby Victors against Melbourne Victory 3-2. Brisbane Roar a 1-0 win over Sydney FC. Another shock there. Sydney FC God, that's the start of the season, isn't it? Canberra 1-0 over Wellington Phoenix in New Zealand, where, as we just spoke about, the, I guess, main highlight of that game was a dog running on the football pitch. Adelaide United getting away win to Wanderers, and Perth Glory getting a home win against Newcastle Jets. At least one Perth Glory side is showing up for this season, because their men certainly are not. Annabelle, I'm going to out you as a Sydney FC fan to start us off.
I'll take it. I'm a proud Sydney FC fan, Cody.
But even aside from that, is there anything that's probably taken you by surprise or anything that stood out to start us off?
I mean, when the last year's champions are on the bottom of the ladder winless, like that is a bit of a shock, especially, you know, they're pretty consistent side over the past, you know, decade. I'd say they've been up there. They've always had some quality. And so, you know, to go winless after the first two games in games they would have been favoured in both is a bit of a shock for me.
Yeah, I think, look, Mariners is probably the only one that I guess maybe you could have seen them getting a result at home as well. That probably does play into it more so. And the fact that Mariners actually had a decent record against Sydney FC last year, I guess. But that Brisbane, as much as Brisbane beat them at home last year in round two as well, which is a nice little repetition of history, I don't know, I don't want to say I wasn't big on this Brisbane Roar side going into this season, but the fact that they've... Maybe it's compiled onto the fact that Sydney FC lost their first game. You don't really see them losing two games in a row to start the season. But that was a game I thought we'd see a reaction from them, and I guess we didn't really. Speaking of, I guess, A-League Women's and us returning, Matt Olsen finally joined on the call. Matt, how you doing, brother?
Yeah, fancy Cody's back for dub, and Perth traffic decides to be the worst it's been in however many years. So, yeah, not doing great from my perspective, and that I've had to show up relatively late for the pre-recording. But no, look, I think just to actually continue on from what you were talking about there, man, Sydney are just such an enigma in how they've started the season. Otherwise, I'm doing well. Thanks for the opening. I don't know where we're at conversation wise, so I'll hand it back to you.
Well, look, I was just going to say, anything from the first two rounds of results that have kind of stood out to you?
Yeah, I mean, it is hard not to look past Sydney, right? That is just unheard of that they would be playing that poorly. I think in terms of sort of the mix of contenders, though, you've kind of got to look at Canberra's good start and acknowledge that I think personally with the squad they've had and the project they've sort of had to build from nowhere, not even knowing if the club would be playing this season, for them to have come out so strongly, I think that has to really be commended and spoken about more in Australian football circles ultimately, because this is a team that, you know, even for everything that's happening off the pitch, they you know, they've had to come back from a really dreadful season last season, and they've made that statement. So really, really impressed to see that from Canberra. So hopefully they're on the up and up, you know, as a sample of what we've seen in the last 2 weeks.
I was just going to say, as you mentioned, like with the off the field, you know, sort of stuff, it's good to see them having a little bit of success, and you hope they can maintain it, because then maybe they'll get a few more sponsors, maybe they'll get some more people to the games, because if any clubs need success, like just to stay alive, it's Canberra. Like they're in a very precarious position, you know, as a club financially.
Yeah, it's that's the reality. Is when they are doing well, they can get a crowd behind them. Like you give them a successful season, you'll get a high 1,000s, maybe even pushing on that 2,000 bracket, even off the back of the World Cup. I'm pretty sure they were getting 2,000 strong crowds. Probably didn't help that they then had a season that was kind of poor, at least to start with, even though they had probably the best attacking duo in Michelle Heyman and Vesna Milivojevic in their side. But I think the thing that surprised me about this squad as well, you look at the players that they've brought in, even over the last couple of years, but if you want to highlight it for this season, Maya Markowski, Aiden Keane, Emma Robers, Sally James, they're probably the main ones that have actually come into the starting lineup. You've got players like Jordana Dos Santos coming off the bench as well. But you're talking about players that weren't exactly setting the league alight. Like, there's talented players there. I'm not saying that they're horrible or anything like that. But for one reason or another, they weren't exactly working their way into, I guess, other A-League clubs. Emma Robers may be the exception there. I know there was times where she was a genuine starting and a good player for Western United. But Sally James was riding the bench a fair bit last season. Aiden Keane couldn't really break into Sydney FC. Maya Markowski was let go altogether by Melbourne Victory for last season. And even that you got players there like Mary Stanich Flood, you couldn't break into Sydney FC while she was there. Like, you're talking about a side that it's a little bit. I'm saying this because I've just come off watching the Mariners documentary where they said even as they were starting and when they were successful in the early 2010s, they were primarily built up of players that, you know, were basically just not being taken by any other club, but they were able to build a really good squad out of it. And I feel like Canberra, at least to start with, are kind of doing that now. I'm actually really, really impressed. Darcy Malone as well, sorry. That's a name I missed. Someone who couldn't even get into matchday squads at City or Sydney. Now she's starting midfield in a team that's top two. So they've found maybe underrated players, I guess, and being able to work with them and find a way to get the best out of them. I think that's something there that's really impressive. And that's something that I think is actually a kind of really good strategy considering, as you said, Annabelle, the financial situations and the whole, are we going to have a license situation to be able to build a
They've
side
got to
like
be a
that?
bit of a Moneyball side almost, like working out where they can kind of like get the talent that other people don't see and utilize it to their kind of system. And I think, yeah, to start this year, they're doing that quite well.
If they make some money off it as well, I'd be really, really impressed considering how little A-League clubs are actually able to make some money sometimes. One game I do want to highlight, and for the both of you, the Melbourne Derby. 3-2 win, Melbourne City. Spec Meyer sending City ahead early. Victory kind of working their way back into a Gilnick penalty. Alana Janoszewski getting on the score sheet as well. Massive moment for her, someone that grew up a Melbourne Victory fan. Matt, you would have seen her a fair bit when she spent a couple of years over in Perth. Obviously, spent that time, well, not, I won't say abroad, but interstate, just trying to make a name for herself in that league. Finally got a chance at a girlhood club and now being able to get on the score sheet in a Melbourne derby. That's absolutely fantastic. Bosch, who had quite a game, I think some of the things I was able to see her do on a ball was quite impressive. She was able to get an equaliser for City and then Spec Meyer winning late. But Matt, I'll throw it to you first because Melbourne City, they've probably had maybe a little bit of time to gel together, considering they were in the AFC Women's Champions League. They had that time to actually like spend a week together in camp training nonstop. That's probably going to have a positive effect on them. I'm sure you would have seen them in that opening game against the Perth as well, albeit on a TV screen. But the way they were able to come back into that game and now they're, I guess, flexing their muscle again, what have you made of their start?
Yeah, it's I think it's again just talking through that sort of second round lens. I think it's very easy to, look at how they've played and think, they've really kind of established their dominance. They're, holding themselves to that standard. And, even when they were 2-0 down against Perth, it wasn't a situation to panic in because they were the far superior team. But I think it's one where they just showed the class to be able to not only pull through, but then put another two on top, So I think that specifically speaking, from an A-League perspective, they've really, really done everything to kind of hold their own. But you do then kind of think of that greater lens of, well, they're actually already match fit. And in a league that historically has been severely under-resourced, pre-season tours have never really been a thing. Like, that conditioning is just so crucial in this competition. And you'd give $1 million to say it's going to be Melbourne City that are one of those clubs that are able to kind of hold their players to that standard and then have that match fitness through the Champions League as well, where, at least in those initial stages, they weren't even playing super competitive teams as well. So the fact that they are able to kind of establish that is, yeah, it's crucial. But the one thing I also kind of want to take away from the win as well is that, similar to Perth, where they did have that lead, I felt that the Victory really kind of were punishing them, in effective areas early on. And I mean, they'd scored two in the first half, similar to what Perth did. But again, it's just that resilience, I guess you could call it, the ability to just really push through and show that they know the football they want to play, and they're very, very comfortable even in uncomfortable situations, plenty of which they've been in. And even again, when they're playing weaker opposition in Asia, you're still conditioned and travelling a lot and having to put up with all sorts. Something in women's football that isn't even really there's not much of a precedent for it. So I just think from all angles, this team are nailing it, but they've also probably had the right setup to be able to achieve, in that kind of environment.
Reality is, as much as, yeah, you can point to the quality of sides they're playing against, they're in camp for 2 weeks. They've actually got the opportunity to train as a full-time squad, which, you know, it's very much noted in the A-League. You don't necessarily get to do that. You're working around day jobs. So they had a period where they're able to remove themselves from that, have 2 weeks to, like I said, build up match fitness, build up team cohesion, build themselves up tactically, but also just genuinely gel as a squad. They did have a fair bit of turnover. So having those new players actually in an environment where they were, I guess, forced to, I guess, get along with their teammates in a way, maybe that's not the right words to put it, but having that opportunity is absolutely massive for them, I think. If we move on to Melbourne Victory, and Annabelle, I'll throw this one to you because I honestly, 2 games in, I still don't know what to think of Victory, and I guess that's normal. It's only 2 games. You don't really want to make any rash judgments, but you've had a game against Adelaide where I won't say they played badly, but Adelaide gave them a run. They found a way to see that out. They come into a game like this where, you know, it is meant to be one of Melbourne Victory's biggest fixtures, maybe especially in the A-League Women's, considering the nature and competitiveness of the competition. Historically, the Sydney FC game might be a little bit bigger, but you've got a side of ex-Matildas, current New Zealand internationals, someone like Kayla Morrison at the back as well, who is genuinely a great player, and even a figure like Alana Murphy in the middle, who, you know, young Matildas as well, someone who can really pull a side together and someone who going into this season probably could be one of those breakout players. But I guess after 2 games, where would you have seen Melbourne Victory, and you think this is probably where they should have been sitting?
Probably, to be honest. I think they're a good side. I think that, like you said, with Kayla Morrison at the back, and they've got Claudia Bunge too, who I think is quite a strong player, but the errors back there, like that sort of stuff has got to stop. Like that goal in the derby, the poor back pass, like that's, you know, schoolyard stuff. That can't be happening in a big game. And, you know, I think you in a team like that, Chidiak and Gilnick both have to fire. I think they're key players for Victory. And they were strong, you know, in that first 45 against City. You know, Victory were the better side then. But when you're having errors like that at the back, like it just deflates the confidence of the whole team. So tidying that up, like they have the pieces of a really good football side, and it's just tidying up those little errors, which I think can be done.
So one thing I've noticed with Melbourne Victory, they, you know, you've got a good side on paper. Maybe in the last couple of years, injuries and inconsistency with actually having a full squad available probably did kill them a little bit, but especially defensively for the players that they do have available to them, even last year when they had Emma Checker there instead of Claudia Bunge, I did feel like they were a little bit underwhelming in that area. So I'm curious to see how that kind of goes this year. I think that's probably one thing. You know, they scored 5 goals this season, but they've also conceded 5. They've played in 2-3-2 wins, which is great for the neutral. Probably not great if you're a Melbourne Victory fan, unfortunately. We'll move on, and I guess moving into this podcast and getting this restarted, I do want to take the time to, I guess, focus in on a couple clubs. And two that I've picked today, I'm going to start with the one that I think both of you can speak to quite well. I know I did have written down another one, but to start off with, we'll go with Perth Glory. Matt, you obviously watch these girls a lot for good reason. They are your hometown club, but obviously they have had a coaching change over the offseason. Stevie Peters and Annabelle obviously coming from the NPL New South Wales. You'd be well across what he can bring to a side as well. I know you were watching that MacArthur Rams side that he was coaching very, very closely. So, look, I'll throw to you, Annabelle, first on this. And, Matt, I want you to chime in afterwards as well. But Stevie Peters coming in, 3 grand final wins in the NPL last season, managed to do the double as well. Someone who knows and understands success, as much as MacArthur Rams had a stacked squad as well. But even before those players came in, he had a knack for, I guess, finding young talent as well that was able to support a high-class squad like that. But what are you expecting, I guess, out of him stepping up to the A-League level as well?
Well, he was so successful with the NPL New South Wales, but at the same time, the MacArthur Rams have always been a really strong club. And so moving to Perth, who historically have not been the strongest of clubs, you know, he doesn't necessarily have the same resources comparatively to work with. Like, he's not necessarily moving to a team that's proven themselves to be champions over the years. But he's brought some players across that I'm really liking, the way they've gelled into the side. Kelly Brown has scored in back-to-back weeks. And also Miku Sunaga, who was the player of the season in the NPL this year. I really rate her, and she scored last week for them. And then She's not from the NPL New South Wales, but I really like Naomi Chinima at the back. She's got leadership. She's proven herself on the, Young Matilda stage. So I think he's brought in some good players. He's clearly good at building a good culture, a good winning kind of mentality within a group. And I think it just takes a little bit of time. So far it's looking good, but I think you can only really evaluate a new coach sort of halfway into slash at the end of the season. So I'm optimistic for the Perth Glory season.
I think firstly, just understanding that expectations are in the basement for obvious reasons, right? What really caught me off guard is that we're at the season launch. And obviously, I mean, the big shock was obviously the fact that Onyi Sok was the co-captain, really someone who just wouldn't know, Australian football from a bar of soap until Perth Glory contacted her to transfer her into the competition, right? Like, big call to make her co-captain. But one thing that really caught me is that Stan was giving his old hullabaloo about, our ambition and these players and that players. And then, the MC asked him, what about the girls' team? What are we looking for? And he actually gave a really astute answer about the fact that we've put a lot of faith in the system for Stephen to be able to, understand, firstly, the advantage of being in Western Australia, be it through travel, conditioning, everything else, with the temperature as well. And also just the fact that we trusted him to actually, find his way with talent and to select a pool of players that was going to be, at the very least, successful enough for where those ambitions are to kind of build a platform and build something. And that can feel like a bit of a platitude when, we're talking about a team that kind of did build up over time through Alex Tsipakis and then kind of simultaneously combusted on themselves and all the players left. So that, that you can build something that does that, but let's take his word for it and say that, he actually is building something pretty special. And what I noticed about Stephen is that he arrived really early on in his tenure, like really, really early on, because he just wanted to get a feel of what it was actually going to be like to be here, to then understand what the girls are going to go through, to then understand what away teams are going to be going through, moving out, to take a 5-6 hour flight to come play a game of football. And what you'll notice about the way Stephen set the team up is that they are going to start the first 10 or 15 minutes, especially when they're at home, with just the utmost intensity and, the ability to just really take it to their opponent, whoever it is. And how's that panned out? They got a goal after 52 seconds against the Jets, and they went 2-0 up against a very, very good Melbourne City side, right? That is the intention of what he wants to do. I think just that shock factor, just get on the front foot and just take it to them. And I'm not saying that that's, going to make this team a top six team. It's that tactic is not really always going to work out. You go on the front foot enough and you can get exposed pretty easily. But I think it's ultimately just speaking to the confidence that he's installed in the girls and his ability to just understand what he's actually got in front of him and what the task actually is. So specifically on the question of Stephen Peters, I back him in a lot. And I think he understands what's required at this level and with this team and with the culture of the club. But I also am very aware, and I don't know if you just want me to segue into some of your other points here, Cody, but I think where that sort of becomes unstuck fairly quickly is that, ultimately on paper, we are probably still talking about quite an experimental team and one who is going to have their issues when things go wrong, as we kind of ended up seeing against Melbourne City. So, like, there's an overwhelming positive to it, but there's a lot you kind of have to sit back and wonder how he's going to kind of get going when things get pretty tough, like they did against City.
Look, Matt, you've been watching a lot of this, I guess, Perth club over the last few years. There's times where they look really, really strong, and then they'll, like you said, you can almost internally combust and expectations fall very, very quickly. But there's times where, they can upset the apple cart a little bit and actually push on and, I guess, be a bit of a threat for finals. If you're looking at this squad, considering, maybe even if you take the coaching factor out of the situation for a sec, if you just look at this squad purely on paper, take away even the results that they've had so far, what does define a successful season for him?
Well, I think establishing an identity and establishing a culture that you can actually just say, in the next two or three seasons, these are the core we want. These are the core of players that we want. And this is like the style that we want to play. And again, I think that cosmetically, Stephen Peters has already kind of done that within 2 weeks. And I really honestly mean that. Like he's built a culture for the club where the identity part of it, be it tactically, be it from a leadership perspective, really falls apart is, you know, Izzy was one of the like two or three surviving members. She got the captaincy. Is she actually going to be like a Tash Rigby type figure for that team, a Kim Carroll type figure for that team, where she can actually just be the face of the club and the leader going forward? And I don't actually know personally. You know, she has more ties with Manchester and Brisbane than she does Perth. And yes, she's been in WA for a long time, but you would question, is that actually a platform to build long term? The other issue I really have with it is you know, there is actually no guarantee, especially that a lot of these girls have come from out of state. There is actually no guarantee that anyone in this team has the same long-term ambition as Stephen does, right? It's one thing to say, I've brought you in from the system where you grew up, where I knew you as a young girl, and you're going to make this big trip to WA with me. It's another thing for then you to look at all the other people in the room who aren't Stephen Peters and say, you know, this club means a lot to me. Because really, really honestly, I knowing the nature of women's football, I don't think that most of the core of that team can actually say that they do. And that's as big a problem for the locals as it is for someone like Megan Wynne, who's already quite old, Welsh international. You know, tactically, the team's already really strongly built around her. That is not a 2 to 3 year term vision as much as it is, we just need a good player on the team right now. And even then, she's injured. Yeah, the more I think about it, the more probably concerned I get. But to answer your question, you just kind of have to build the platform. And that win against the Jets was the start of something where you can say, yeah, look, there's a team here, and Stephen has definitely put in the work for part of that. I just don't know if he's going to have the goods to be able to turn that into the core of a team that can build over the span of a few years.
Well, in that case, Annabelle, I guess you've seen probably Stephen Peters more than any of us. More than any of us. You've seen what, I guess, his style and what he's about in terms of, I guess, what he can output into a team. You've seen him with a successful side, and there was times where Macarthur Rams did have dips in form a little bit as well, maybe some results that weren't, I guess, flattering for them. If you're going to pick down Peter's brain a little bit in terms of, you know, going off that loss to Melbourne City to then being at home against Newcastle Jets, I guess, were you kind of expecting that same reaction where they started the match in a similar fashion, but almost maybe learned from their mistakes in a sense where they were actually able to hold on as well?
Yes, I think Stephen Peters has always been quite an aggressive coach, and he's got his philosophy. And I don't think previous results will change that too quickly. You know, yeah, if there's a pattern of results, you know, 6 weeks into a season, you might adjust tactics, but one loss like that to a quality side isn't going to change his outlook. You know, you saw in the NPL New South Wales Grand Final that Macarthur Rams scored in the first minute of that game too, so. He likes to start early. He likes to go quickly, and he likes for his teams to do that. And he's brought Kelly Brown across, as I mentioned, who is sort of key to that philosophy. In terms of the Jets game, they held on, but it was just like they didn't hold on very well because, you know, they were playing the last half hour against a 10-man Jets side. And they didn't run away with the game. They probably should have, you know, in that instance, scored another couple, but instead, you know, they just hold on 3-2. So I don't think that'd be filling you with a whole bunch of confidence, you know, moving forward for the season. But it is nice, as you know, you've said already, Perth need to, you know, celebrate every single win they get and use that as a building block.
Well, considering, like I mentioned before, how the men's side are going, yeah, at least you've got one team there you can celebrate a little bit. And look, I guess another way you can look at that game, Josie Allen and Sheridan Gallagher, the two goals they scored, both were bombs, to say the least. I could use an adjective in front of it, but I do want to try and keep this PG to some sort of extent. We'll move on. I think that's probably enough on Perth for now. But another team that I think's probably had a bit of an interesting start, Adelaide United. SA great, as Antonis would say. Because, well, to be fair, they have started pretty well. That game against Melbourne Victory. And Matt, I don't know if you're going to agree with me on this, but Adelaide were probably a little bit unlucky not to actually come away with that That's not to say Melbourne Victory didn't deserve it. They did play pretty well. The goal Ava Breida scored to win that match as well, that was worthy of being a match winner. But I guess for a side that had built strongly, I guess they were, well, when I say built strongly in terms of actually the actual players they brought in and the squad they built, to have that result, maybe a little bit unfortunately as well, I guess the one thing you'd be looking at would be, okay, how are they going to react the following week, especially going away from home, as much as maybe Wanderers, you know, it's not, I mean this with as much respect as possible, it's not always the fortress. They don't have 100% record or anything like that. It is a place that, you know, if you go, you do well, you do your core competencies, you can go and get a result. And Adelaide have actually been pretty good at getting a result in Western Sydney now that I think about it. But you do look at that game and go, okay, lost the first game. We know we've got a good squad, but we need this win to make sure we can get that confidence and make sure we've got that buy-in from the local Adelaide community. How important is a result like that they got on the weekend?
Yeah, I think obviously, you know, Adrian Stenter, long-term involved with the project, has a core, and ironically enough, with what I said about Stephen Peters, I think the complete opposite is true and very vibrant with Adelaide. You have a core that you can actually build off, and a core that is, you know, I think you've in the run sheet somewhere you said the band's back together or something, and I that is
we're gonna have a bit of fun with it, man.
it's totally true when you talk about Adelaide, but I think that there's probably one or two things that I'm concerned about, just in terms of, I think the natural leadership in the team definitely is still quite, I guess, raw. It's just that there is a lack of a real figure that you know you're going to be excited when you turn on an Adelaide game. Maybe I'm being a bit
Are you talking about leadership in terms of the actual squad, or are you talking about leadership in terms of being a real X-factor player?
Both, honestly. And I know you kind of refer to, you know, Chelsea Dorber, Fiona Wirtz. I
no, that wasn't the part I was going to describe. I was going to talk about the actual leadership part. Well, I think Isabel Hodgson's a really good captain.
Yeah. My point with this, though, is that I just think that that is the kind of thing that has undone them in previous years. And for everything that they've kind of built in these first 2 weeks, and as good as it is to see, the person in me that's seen Alex Apakos's Perth create an incredible, you know, way that they play their football, and again, those kind of internals in terms of the leadership and everything else, it was 5-star, right? And then, yeah, it was mostly honestly tactical with the way he got them set up, but it ran stale, and the players you were expecting to perform weren't performing, and they were relying on a lot of, you know, strokes of luck from, you know, someone like Emile Farrow. And ultimately, when we talk about an expanded 22-round season, of which this will just be the second, if I'm not mistaken, the longevity is the question here, okay? And I could put a negative spin on this and say, no, Adelaide won't last 22 rounds, but I don't know that, as a matter of fact. And so I'm just, for as good as it is to see and as awesome as it is to talk about, when a team that you don't expect really kind of does show that gear like they did against Victory, because I think you're right, they were fantastic. And then they bounced back from it away from home. Like, it's good, but you just have to wonder, come, you know, round 16, 17, 18, is it going to be the same Adelaide that we see? And I think that is probably the question that sets up whether this team actually does have a lot of that identity and core and leadership and all those things that we do question.
See, my argument with Adelaide is this is almost a similar, if not the same, squad that made top four 2-3 years ago. By logic, why can't they do it again? It's the most nuanced tactical insight that you're going to get from me on this show. I sincerely apologize. Annabelle, I guess just kind of building on that as well, maybe looking forward for Adelaide. You know, you have two good performances, one good result in there. There is something clear to build off, and it wasn't long ago that this side was successful, but albeit they have had a few years or a couple of years, sorry, where things have kind of slowly started to come down. I guess if you're looking at this side where they've probably made a point to go, okay, we're bringing these players back in, we want to build a strong squad that we know can push for finals, are you expecting that they do, or is it still that there's probably too much quality around the rest of the league in general?
I think there's a chance for Adelaide, and a strong chance, because, you know, I know Matt was talking about the lack of leadership, and I'm not 100% sure. I'm not, you know, fully up to date on the Adelaide leadership situation. But if you're looking for leadership and X factor, last week, you know, Emily Condon was pretty damn special with that, you know, Olympico from the corner. So, like, she's a player who's been there a while, who would have strong leadership capabilities and has that little bit of X factor that you saw. I think everyone else, you know, like you mentioned Wirtz as, you know, a key player. She's not young. A lot of the players have proven themselves over time. And so I don't think they'll necessarily be as prone to fizzling out as perhaps some other clubs that rely on young talent, that rely on, you know, players who might not have developed the maturity in the league over time. I think Adelaide, as individuals, are a bit more battle-tested. And as you mentioned a couple of years ago, it's a very similar squad to that successful campaign. So, you know, they've proven themselves a little bit in that time. And if they can keep this sort of gelling, I think the thing that they need to focus on, particularly after the Wanderers game, is converting all the opportunities, because they had, I think, here 25 shots, only 13 on target and 2 goals. So, you know, other teams that have perhaps higher quality than the Wanderers will not let them get that many opportunities. So they need to be able to convert at a, you know, higher rate than that. But, you know, I think Adelaide looked promising.
Matt, how long has it been since we brought stats into a conversation on this pod?
This is vibes-based analysis. You know, it's what I do. That's my thing, is vibes-based analysis. And as for you, I think most of what kind of got this program going the first 2-3 years it existed was me. I come out with a really big outrageous take, and then you're like, okay, that's the argument for the next 40 minutes. And that was the show. So,
this is why we need an extra person. We need someone that actually probably half knows what they're talking
about.
I'm
pretty sure that's the only stat I've got in my little notes here. So
hey, you've done better than us already. This is already a quality signing coming through. Also, the fact that you got Wirtz's name correctly the first time, me and Matt, unfortunately, on a pod with her, messed that up. That explains that we had her on and we butchered her name big time. And unfortunately, we weren't made aware of it until after we finished recording. Once again, Fiona, if you are listening, I do sincerely apologize. I don't think I've ever actually been more embarrassed after a podcast than that day when she said that. Oh, man, that was something. But look, I think we'll probably leave the Adelaide conversation there for now as well. I think this is side look from my point of view. I think there's potential there, and we're seeing that potential very early on. There's definitely a definite question to be raised about whether they can maintain it, but I probably wouldn't argue that's a leadership or an X factor sort of thing. I think that's just more a thing of there's other teams that are going to work their way into this competition that probably have a squad that just needs to gel together before things start clicking and things start, I guess, we start seeing them at their best. When we see that, how Adelaide compares to those teams, I think will be really, really interesting. But if they can get onto an early start, you're talking 50% of teams make finals. There's no reason why I think they can't be there. And talk about experience at the back. I can't believe I forgot the same Matilda McNamara. Having her come back in, like, I can see you nodding, Matt.
That's an inclusion that, like, is exactly what I'm talking about. When you talk about the team that has, like, just really become quite stale and missed the finals for a few seasons running, it was the first thing I said.
Came last year as well.
Hey, yeah. Well, it's the first thing I said when, you know, I was on the podcast with Christian and we kind of talked about all the teams going into the season. It was just like, Matilda's like someone that just comes to mind as someone that can actually, again, I know she's obviously a defensive player, but someone that actually can just kind of be a presence there, where if you just kind of replace her with a more generic player out of either South Australia or someone with a little less you know, experience at this level. I don't know. But we're moving on. We'll move on the conversation. I wanted to point out that I really, really like that signing.
Well, to be fair, when I was asked about it a month and a half almost before the season started, who my top A-League women's signing was so far, even though most clubs don't usually announce them until probably the week before the season starts, as is A-League women's tradition, unfortunately. I'm all for tradition being broken if that stops. She was my number one signing, and honestly, the closer we got to the season, I can't remember if there was maybe one or two that I thought was better, but if she was knocked off of that spot, she wasn't knocked off very far. It's probably one of the signings of the season for me. I think she can actually transform that side and that club in terms of the women's space. I just want to talk quickly, because we didn't do, I guess, an in-depth preview pod, Matt. I know you did speak with Christian before the season started, but Probably, I guess transfer season's obviously everyone's favorite part of football. It's a customary thing to get involved in. But being that we didn't really do a preseason pod, we haven't gone through anyone's transfer windows or anything like that. So I want to spend a couple of minutes actually just pointing out some signings that, you know, may even whether we thought they were going to be good or going to be shit going into the season, at least now they look like they're doing well. Name I want to start with them. It's the one we mentioned. Well, I think I mentioned it earlier, Maja Markovski, who I actually had the pleasure of interviewing before the 2022-23 season. Double in her first game, assist in the one that came off against Wellington, released by Melbourne Victory before the start of last season. Coming back into the league, obviously had a horrible run of injuries as well. Spent, I guess, a good part of 2024 absolutely balling out in the NPL Victoria and showing that she's definitely a level above what we see there. Scoring bomb after bomb, techie player as well. But either of you are free to chime in on this, but did any of you actually kind of envision a start for her this season like what she's been able to do?
I think in terms of her input, yes. In terms of the actual result, given her role in the team and the players around her, and that's ultimately me, you know, being disrespectful to Canberra, right? That's what it is. I just think that when you actually statistically look at the level that she was at for Bulleen Lions, I think it was, that is a
It
player that
was,
just,
yeah.
yeah, that's someone that just naturally belongs at A-League level, right? And she's always been a name that I think a lot of football fans in this country relate to when they think of like a young, dependable female player that they enjoy watching. I reckon, again, you don't even have to be the biggest Dub fan, and a name like Maja Markovski's up there because she's a presence. And you know, again, there,
Not
you
just
could
that, just
probably,
character as well. You know, you got the
yeah.
celebration down.
Well, yeah, that's part of it. I think she has actually had a few viral moments celebrating as well. But I just feel like, you know, there's the aura and the presence, and there's, you know, probably 100 players who are more qualified. But when you watch her and she's, you know, playing well or a big part of the team that she's in, and she did have a lot of moments for Melbourne Victory that I think it would be disrespectful to kind of take away from. There's just someone there that you were very much acquainted with, and. It honestly, it brings me back to an era where I would watch the Dub on, you know, the ABC when it was all really fresh and new, and the players that went on to become really famous Matildas, you just knew that when, if you were going to be watching one team that weekend, you just knew that you're excited to kind of rely on those dependable players. And what really kind of I reflect on when I look at this move is that regardless of how this team went, regardless of what else was going on, she was going to be a really, really key cog in the wheel. And, you know, if you were going to turn on Canberra to watch them, you know you were going to watch Markovski ball out and have a good game. And that for me is probably just like the big thing that really sticks with me, is that you could be someone who's barely watched the league, you know, you could be someone who's a diehard Canberra fan, and you know what you're going to get from her. And there are very few players, regardless of their skill level or where they're at, where you can honestly say that about them, across the male or female game.
Funny because you look at her time Melbourne Victory, I think her output was probably the one thing that let her down a little bit. As much as, you know, she's someone that you can kind of tune in, watch, you know, you're going to get a skillful player that can catch an eye, but she wasn't scoring much as well. I think there's that second season with Melbourne Victory, I think she only scored once, maybe twice.
I would put that down to the internal environment that she was around. The
Maybe.
fact of the matter is, I don't think she's really been in, well, certainly at A-League level, we know she hasn't really been in an environment where she actually is one of the more dependable players in it. Now, I'm not saying that she didn't play poorly for Melbourne Victory. I'm just saying there was probably, and almost certainly, a more experienced squad in the few years that she was there. Maybe I'm wrong, but you know, I feel like, given the success that they had as well at the time, it's going to be easier to spot the mistakes when you're playing for a team as dominant as Victory have been across the competition.
Annabella, get your thoughts on this one. Mariana Speckmeyer coming into, I guess, a stacked Melbourne City side. You're replacing, we're talking off air about Daniela Galic, of course, coming in and replacing such a, not just a great figure in a squad, but a popular figure as well within Australian football. I know a lot of people are wanting to see her, I guess, go on and progress and be as good a Matilda as what she can be. Two of those massive fans of her being the other two people that you're with on this podcast, of course. But Marion Stegmaier coming in, being able to fill those boots and being able to hit the ground running, as much as, you know, she's obviously a bit more senior than what Daniela Galic is, a bit more experience behind her. But you, just having her in there, Melbourne City haven't lost, I guess, that flair creativity that she's able to bring to a side. And I guess in a way, maybe because you're adding that quality with the experience that she can bring to a side as well, you know, we saw in glimpses at Wellington what she was able to do. Obviously, Wellington had a better season than what they had been the 2 years before last season. But seeing her in a City side now with that level of quality around her as well, we're seeing her flourish into what could be almost one of the league's best players.
Yeah. And if we're talking pure output, like, she's hit the ground running and scoring goals. And that's what you want from attacking players, is getting the ball in the back of the net, whether it's through goals or assists. And she's, you know, already doing that in pretty spectacular fashion, actually. Her two goals against the Victor in the derby on the weekend were really nice hits of the ball. So, you know, I think the key there is just that City have always been a strong side and they are able to play the ball forward to their attacking creative flair players regularly in a way that perhaps Wellington Phoenix can't do. Or at least couldn't do while Stegmaier was there. So I think City are able to utilize her a little bit better and give her slightly better service, better, you know, chances and just more frequent chances at goal. And so far she's, you know, paying them back for that with a couple of nice goals. And yeah, she just looks very explosive, great technique when she hits a ball. And yeah, it looks like there'll be more goals from her this season, I reckon, plenty more.
Stacks for frontline to go up with, and I think maybe while she's at Wellington Phoenix, you know, she would take a lot of attention off, I guess, defenders of an opposition because, you know, they look at her, she's the focal point, everything kind of went through her. They had players around like Macy Fraser, of course, but she was someone that could really garner a lot of attention, whereas now in City, you can put as much attention on her as you can, but then you still got players like Rana Polisena that you got to cover as well. It's, you know, there's probably a little bit more that you need to look at in the City side, which means she maybe have a bit more freedom to roam. She's probably still going to be that spearhead for him, but still got Polisena behind her, Lauren Bosch on one side of her. There's still those threats you've got to manage, and because I guess you've got to manage a squad rather than a player, it is harder for opposition teams to shut her down. So I'm really excited to see how she can, I guess, progress throughout the season because, you know, like I said, you're talking about someone that maybe even be smoky for Julie Dolan if things go, I guess, as well as what they can be. I don't know if you're laughing because you agree or disagree with me, Matt, but...
No, it's just, it's like, I don't even think it's that much of a bang on call. It's just that it's round two. So,
yeah, look, totally.
I'm not saying she's my pick. I'm saying if she can continue at that level, there's a case there.
And it's actually,
there's no reason
like,
she can't.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's also very A-League to just completely buy into hype. So,
you know,
I think
what? You're not wrong. You are not wrong.
It's a staple of the community. But also, Mariana's a player that I'm really keen to talk about. Mostly just because, like, when you see players that are really good at one club and they kind of do make that step up, regardless of the environment. Now, the traditional thought process of this would be, like, in men's football, a player in, like, the English League One who scores, like, 40 goals a season, they make a move to the Premier League. Can they actually just deal with that insane jump-up impression? Now, we're obviously talking about a completely different environment. We're talking about moving from, you know, New Zealand to Melbourne City as a US college-influenced Venezuelan international. My microphone just cut out there. Yeah, no, all good. But I feel like the environment that she's jumped into, it would have been really easy to get overawed, being in a team that's geared towards, you know, more talent, better success. And the fact of the matter is the environment's actually suited her better and she's delivered at an even higher level. So you really have to question what kind of ceiling is she setting, even in the short sample that we've seen of her in Asia and in the league. It's massive.
It's look, probably two people I won't talk about in depth, but a few names that I really just want to, I guess, mention quickly. Jay Pennock, Brooke Nunnett, Mariners. I think Mariners, you know, there was the visa players that they did have that turnover in that area, and they've managed to replenish that part of their squad really, really well. You look at Mariners now, you're potentially looking at a side that could, you know, maybe even, like, they were in, I think it was the top five last season. I reckon they could make that step up, maybe push for the top four. I wouldn't be shocked. They've got squad there and they've got two very, very good English players that may be able to contribute to that. But Sheridan Gallagher as well, the impact that she's been able to have. We did mention the fact that she scored an absolute banger earlier on in the show, but I think just having her back in the league as well, a figure that was popular within Australian football, brings, I guess, a unique style of play. I was a little bit disappointed when she did end up leaving the league. Look, players are able to choose the career, I guess, that they want to go into, but if we don't keep her in football, I do think it's a loss to the sport. But it's good to have her back, and it's good to see her, I guess, maybe flourishing to someone that can have an impact at a senior level as well. But Annabelle, I'll throw to you first. Is there any other signings that have caught your eye?
I mean, we've already discussed them a little bit, but I think the transfers they've brought in at Perth, I think, could really revitalise that club and help, bring in the sort of culture where players, they're transferring to Perth because they want to go to Perth and they want to play for Stephen Peters and that sort of thing, rather than they want game time because their current club won't let them. That's the kind of culture that Perth need to try and build, where they actually, people want to go there rather than have to go there.
So buying into Sunaga stocks a little bit early. To be fair, if anyone's going to do it, it is probably you, Annabelle. You actually have seen her play at least, and they've had a fairly decent amount. Matt, do you have anyone that you want to throw in there too?
I this one's kind of got me a bit miffed. I feel like the sample sizes are probably too small, and even the people that we're overwhelmingly sort of impressed with, like a Markowski or a Speckmeyer, I would dare say that, that kind of speaks for itself, and we have spoken about it at length. I'm going to probably take a book from the Newcastle Jets, oddly enough. Their young core players, for me, I think there's probably a lot of talent in there that you could tap into something special if it's applied in a different environment. Obviously, look, I just think they're very kind of boxed in and isolated the way they are. But, I did like a lot of the flow and movement that they showed on Sunday for Josie Allen's goal, for example, where I think that what was going wrong in that game is that, Perth had pressed extremely well. But then when the sort of flow of the movement hadn't really panned out, Newcastle's counter was really, really lethal. And a lot of players contributed to it in like a way that almost exactly seemed really, really planned out by Ryan Campbell. So, I mean, Josie Allen probably is someone that I kind of looked at and thought, given that she's going to have a pretty solid core that we built, that was built on from last season, on top of having, other experienced heads that know their way around the game, like a Sheridan Gallagher, Cass Davis, Lauren Allen, the names you can just kind of roll off the tongue, right? I think that that team could gel into something that becomes pretty competitive, and you don't really know, you don't really have a lot of expectations similar with Perth, whereas, someone like a Kelly Brown comes out, you're pretty pleasantly surprised, and I think that the Jets just have that aura about them to an even bigger degree. So it's yeah.
Look, I guess looking ahead, Sydney Derby. Now, you look at this, and maybe not even historically, but definitely over the last few years, it has been very much a one-sided affair. Sydney FC go in, Sydney FC usually win. Wanderers, if Wanderers get a draw, that's almost a season-defining result for them. It's all at least one of the highlights of their season. I remember that nil-all draw they had, I think it was the 2021-22 season, and that was considered a big deal almost. But I look at this game now, and it's the one reason why I want to highlight this as well, not just because it's Sydney Derby, but because I look at this, and I don't know if Sydney FC is actually bang on to win this match. Annabelle, I'm going to get your thoughts on this, because I know you do watch the Sydney FC side in depth, and we were talking a little bit about it off air, but I guess to sum it up as well, you look at the Sydney FC side, do you think they're actually a bit vulnerable at the moment?
Absolutely. I mean, their last two results have shown that. They've been, incredibly vulnerable. They've lost them both. And, the Wanderers haven't necessarily looked the strongest either. But I think Sydney, especially in the midfield, that they've been really just not clicking. They've brought in some players that might be talented individuals, but they're not a team yet. And, a lot of the style of play, it's long balls forward that are, 50-50. It's, they're not controlling possession very well. They're not controlling the ball very well. And I don't know, it doesn't look like your classic Sydney FC, you know, side that's normally quite polished. I think, yeah, the Wanderers have a chance to maybe come in and surprise people. But at the same time, they haven't necessarily looked fantastic in their last two games either. So it's perhaps slightly under strength Sydney derby on both sides.
Honestly, I think either men's or women's, I don't think there's been a Sydney derby where both sides have gone in this poor form, which is actually kind of nuts to think about. But you look at the Sydney FC team as well. You've got a back line that isn't necessarily worse than what they had last season. You probably could still have Kirstie Fenton come into it and improve it. The midfield genuinely should still be one of the best midfield threes in the competition. Chauvet, great DM. I do apologize if I didn't get that name correctly. And Mackenzie Hawksby should be the best midfielder in the league. And then Hannah Lowry, Matt Olsen, your favorite player there. But I look at their front line, I don't think there's actually much to be, I guess, threatened by. I get every year you've had a figure like Courtney Vine that you could kind of lean on and have as a focal point, even if that focal point wasn't necessarily going through the middle. You take her out, you've got three players there that, then whatever combination they want to come up with, whether it's Farrah Connors, Talhaneke, or Farrah Connors, Dos Santos, you've got three good players there, but I don't see anyone that can actually go and spearhead a side and be that X factor. Connors, I think, is probably a little bit too inconsistent in front of goal. Farrah, I don't look at as a goal scorer. I think, Matt, even you mentioned it, her best performances for Perth came when she was being a hold-up striker and letting other players kind of push through on goal. And then she scored the hat-trick against City and they went, oh, yeah, let's play long balls to Farrah, when things kind of fell on their ass. And now she's meant to be leading a line for what's meant to be the biggest club in the country. I don't know if that's actually something that's going to work out. I don't see who in this Sydney FC side can actually be that X factor unless Connors really finds their shooting boots. But Matt, I guess you kind of understand the Millie Farrah side of things as well and the style of player that she is. But is that someone that you think can be the striker that Sydney FC need, or I guess the focal point that Sydney FC need?
I am actually in hysterics on the inside because with Christian, I like overwhelmingly said Millie Farrow is going to easily win the Golden Boot. Yet your analysis of what you just said, like objectively speaking, isn't wrong. And I'll give you the two sides of it, right? I'll give you the physical side of her and the workhorse and, you know, the player that we understand probably actually is going to be in more of a supporting role, drop a bit deeper, you know, be there for some of the other talent to pick up the mantle. And then there's the other side of it of, well, actually, if you do the inverse and say, well, if you actually look at the players around her that are there to support her with her work, with her kind of workhorse, you know, nature of how she can be that really physical presence and someone who does play that forward role, my head kind of went to that latter option of, she has this incredible midfield and a dependable forward core around her, to the point where she will actually be bagging goals, unlike in Perth, where all she had to do was drop back as far as she can, get the ball back into the midfield and kind of, you know, get numbers out wide. And that's, you know, it was a system that was beneficial for someone like Susan Fonsonkamp at the time, for example. But I also think that perhaps part of the issue is that they don't really actually know what they're doing in that role, how serviceable she is going to be. And I think when you look at the midfield three, like you mentioned, even though Hannah has literally come from playing with Millie at Perth, I just wonder if they're actually not sure on what the combination is or how they want it to set up. And that's a really big part of why we probably see a lot of success, or a lack of success rather, in that sort of forward half of the pitch. But again, with Sydney, I just, you can't say going into a game like this that they weren't going to grab it by the scuff of the neck. I mean, the idea that the Wanderers of all clubs, you know, knowing that they're with their well-reported issues off pitch in a women's sense, if they of all clubs continue this reign of terror on Sydney FC, I'm not sure, you know, that I'm going to trust my own thoughts anymore. You know, like that's
the thing there, Matt. You talk about reported off-field issues.
Mm.
Everything that I've seen from the Wanderers, those issues don't exist anymore.
Mm.
Which means if you've got, I guess, a club culture that's actually competent off the field, I think it's maybe the on-field stuff you can still speak to, because I don't know if it's the highest quality squad that, if you looked at these two sides on paper, there is a disparity. as much as there isn't a disparity in form. But if you've got a club culture that, you know, is pushing you to success, and this is a match that you'll be building for to try and get a result from, and then the inverse is that you've got a Sydney FC side that don't really know what they're doing at the moment. I think it's a dangerous area for Sydney FC. And
yeah,
Annabelle, I'll put this to you. If Sydney FC lose this game, what kind of warning bells are being rung off? Because I know some fans are going to be pissed if that game doesn't go the way that you want it to.
Oh, I think plenty of warning bells. Like, I know for me, I can't really remember the last time Sydney FC lost three in a row, let alone to start a season losing three in a row. Like, if that happens, you completely forget about the championship from last year. And that sounds harsh, but, you know, you're only as good as your last game. And if you lost three losses, then I think, you know, you start talking about, you know, almost Dante's job. And that sounds harsh, but, you know, it's
wait, would you sack him after three serious. Games after he's won?
No,
that
I would
titles?
Not sack him, but no, I would Spec not Mike's sack him,
win the
but
job
you'd monitor it. You'd monitor it a bit more closely, because I think they've lost a lot of talent, like Courtney Vine and Charlotte McLean, that duo, to lose them over to America is a big loss. And I think they've always had strong individuals as well as a strong coach. And if they don't have those strong individuals firing, then it, you know, maybe not fire him, but you look at him to try and kind of revitalize this team. And look, this might sound a bit, you know, silly, but across the league, Sydney FC are one of those clubs that often get large attendances, would get large viewership. And I think, look, this might be just the Sydney FC fan in me talking, but I think the league is better when Sydney FC is good.
That's the classic argument that Wanderers men's fans actually give for their side. So, you know what, I'll pay it. It's interesting, because it actually probably could speak to, I guess, Yorish's quality as a coach. It doesn't have the same, I guess, level of X factor that he's used to. Now he's got to kind of work. He's in this transition period. I guess it's going to show his quality as a coach, what he can do with, I guess, a certain level of a squad. And it's still, the reality is, like, we can talk about players coming in now. They've still got a good squad there that should really be finishing at least top four, top three in the competition. So I guess if you're losing three in a row, it probably does put a little bit of pressure on that night round fixture, which, come to think of it, it's Melbourne City afterwards. So if you can't get a result here, and then you're going against the Melbourne City side that, especially if they win on the weekend, are looking really, really good, yeah, it's definitely warning bells, because it's down the barrel of not just being three losses in a row, but four losses in a row to start the season. And that's usually how many losses they end up with in a season. So if you're doing that right off the bat, that is dangerous. But
it's just a big test for the club's culture as a whole, not just the coach, but this is a winning culture as a club on both sides of things, you know, men's and women's. And to think that, you know, they'd go the opening four games without a win would really just, it'd be kind of, you know, alarming to the whole club.
Be alarming to the whole league. I think a lot of people would be sitting there, what the hell's going on? Talk about the inverse, talk about the Wanderers, because, you know, as much as we're highlighting the issues that are going on with Sydney FC, maybe the Wanderers aren't as, I guess, on the forefront, because, you know, they don't have that history of almost guaranteed success. But considering, I guess, what Robbie Hooker was building towards last season, and, you know, maybe if you use last season as an example, things do take time to build at the Wanderers. They're not necessarily a side that's going to start off on the front foot really, really well. But it's the first time in a long time that they've actually had consistency going into a new season, and the same coach going into a new season. And that coach actually this time has, you know, a full preseason that he got to work on with this squad, and 7 days out from the season, isn't sitting there going, oh, I've still got to learn everyone's names. But I was impressed with what Robbie Hooker was able to do last season. I do think that there's potential in this squad, not because of who they've brought in, but more out of the players they've been able to retain. There is probably the element of the fact that, you know, you are losing a little bit of creativity, not having Holly Casper's kind of in that 10 half space role there. But you've kept a hold of, what do you call it, Sophie Harding. You've brought in Sienna Savesco, who, as much as she didn't play much last season, can still be a quality player. And we've seen that in the first couple games of the season. That's someone I probably should have mentioned when we were talking about some of the better transfers to start the season. You've got a squad there that can be, I guess, good, and maybe even a mid-table squad, and maybe borderline pushing on finals, which, considering Wanderers' recent years, isn't a bad position to be in. There's players there that you can build around. There's a squad there that you can go, okay, let's try and take this to another level. The Japanese midfielders come in, Harada, another good signing as well. Amy Harrison at the back as well, going into a season actually being a centre back. But it's a weird one, because on one hand you look at this and go, this is our opportunity to beat Sydney FC if you're a Wanderers fan. But on the other hand, it's like, well, do they have the right to beat Sydney FC, because they're not exactly, I guess, setting the league alight themselves. Annabelle, I'll put this back on to you again. If you're Wanderers, are you confident going into this game, or is this just another derby for you where, you know, maybe you're not exactly expecting the best results that history suggests that you're going to end up getting?
I'm not sure Wanderers are super confident. I think they've always got a little bit of that underdog spirit, you know, that, you know, comes when you don't always win all the time. You know, you're fighting for results week in, week out. So I don't think they'd necessarily go in super confident. Like you said, I think they're building a decent squad, a lot of young talent coming through that have, you know, had good seasons in the NPL New South Wales. And I think that it's just tough for a squad that is struggling in front of goal and struggling to get the ball up the field. I think their defence was pretty decent last week, so that could be somewhere where they can hold out Sydney FC for a while, frustrate them, and then maybe sneak a goal in to kind of rattle them. Sydney FC have leaked goals just before halftime. They lost two games, so maybe Wanderers could sense something there and head into the break, you know, and that could give them the confidence if they're ahead at the break. But I don't see them like coming out and dominating Sydney FC like we've seen, you know, certainly the Mariners do. And even Brisbane were definitely the stronger side in that game. I think they have the chance to win, but I don't think they have the chance to dominate Sydney FC.
Yeah, look, I'd be surprised if they go in and actually take that game on the front foot as well, especially away from home. It'll be that crowd and like can be quite intimidating. They're on top of players as well. It'll be an interesting atmosphere, considering, I guess, you look at the situation Sydney FC is in as well. Matt, do you have anything to build on that as well?
Yeah, I just think that in order to gain confidence in that Wanderers product, you just have to see a little bit of the results. I want them to get to that kind of mid to late stage of last season where they actually looked dependable before I can sit here and say that they've got the goods to win a Sydney derby. And Sydney, you know, for their credit, I mean, they can be in whatever shape they want. I think it's just long term we need to see the Wanderers that we know they can be under Robbie Hooker actually deliver and become that club for a few weeks on the run before a fixture like this actually becomes as big as it's maybe built. Am I being harsh? Look, probably, but I just actually look at what they've done this season. You know, the Adelaide game, I think, was probably more to Adelaide's credit, but it's the Newcastle one that I really try and wrap my head around with this team, where I think they just kind of regressed to the mean a little bit. And it was a very mid-tier game from, you know, what have historically certainly been two pretty mid to lower tier clubs in the competition. And that was where all of the talk about what has been built, and it is incredible. Like, don't take that away. Like, I think they've made massive strides in an on-pitch perspective, but I don't know. I feel like this is actually the platform for the tide to turn sky blue. And yeah, I just think the results are there for the Wanderers for me to confidently say that.
I don't think it's a harsh thing to say that in terms of the Wanderers. Like, the reality is history does dictate that history is not on their side in this fixture, I guess. Or history is not on their side in general. They haven't had a good run at the A-League Women's for a good 5 or 6 years now. I can't remember what it was the season exactly that they finished fourth. But since then, they haven't really been, they haven't set the league alight in any way. So, no, I don't disagree with you. I think they do need to show that, I guess, run of form before, I guess, you start looking at them going, all right, that's a side that you can be confident going into a massive fixture that they're going to be able to pull something off. So,
I mean,
yeah,
no, I mean, just to that note, though, how big would it be if they actually do it? Like that
it would be. That would send a big message as well. I think what Wanderers, I think, are missing is a win like that against Sydney FC, where they can go, especially since that kind of boom of women's football post World Cup or post even announcement of the World Cup. I think, like, we talk about wins in the Sydney Derby. There was a time where they did beat Sydney FC 5-0 in that year where they played really, really well.
And I was at that game at Combank. Oh, it wasn't really fun to be there as a Sydney FC
fan. I was about to say, you just had to look like you got PTSD for a sec.
No, it was not much fun. Yeah, we're gonna like I think it was a double header and we just went, nah, we're not bothered to watch the next game, let's go get food and cheer ourselves up type of thing.
Oh,
To be
no
fair, the
way.
double header didn't involve Sydney FC. It was like Western Sydney versus Melbourne or
Ah.
something. So wasn't as keen into that. But I think for Western Sydney, like the last time they'd had success like that, they had a really high quality international players. Like Lynn Williams was in that side for them.
Benny Cross as well, if you're looking at Aussies.
Yeah.
Ellie Carpenter
Really,
played for them at one
really
point?
talented players.
Did who, sorry?
Ellie Carpenter play for them at one point?
It wasn't that year, I think she
Yeah.
just left. Or was that she wasn't in that squad though, was she?
Oh, I don't think she was in that squad, but
Yeah.
she's been around there.
Nah, she left
And
before they moved to Spotless, because I remember watching her at Spotless when she was playing for Canberra. So yeah, it was a
geez,
bit
that's
before.
aged like a fine wine, hasn't it? There's
Oh.
something that's been on the back of my mind, and I know we have another segment to segue onto. But there was just something, Annabelle, you said about Sydney FC are the club that bring the metrics, bring the fans and everything like that. And then Cody, you made a comment earlier about, Canberra, they had that uptick in fans post World Cup. I'd like to really reintroduce you both to like the 2008 era of the W League, because McKellar Park, I'm not even joking, McKellar Park in that time was like the spot to be for Australian football. Like that place was rocking. And every time a Canberra game was on ABC, you knew you were in for a good time. They didn't disappoint. They won a title in dramatic fashion against Brisbane. I watched it back the other day. The commentary from that guy who used to do the games on ABC was Stephanie Brance. My God, was that man a commentator? Just edgy seat stuff. McKellar Park, just rocking with, a couple thousand people. That green machine era, I'd love to see that, amplified with a new era. But more
Look, I don't
to
want to expose myself too much, but I
the.
was in preschool in 2008, so I can't say I remember it too well.
There's not many times where I feel old on this podcast, but you have just made me do that.
Oh, sometimes I forget how old I am. That's probably the problem. Closer to 30 than I am 20. Far out.
Well, anyway, we'll keep track before we start moving off. We start getting too sidetracked. We did have the chance to speak to Sienna Savesca about the Sydney Derby in the lead up before this weekend. So coming up, here's a few words from one of Western Sydney's newest recruits. We are here with Sienna Savesca of the Western Sydney Wanderers. Sienna, how are you doing today?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Annabelle, you're still with me. I hope you're still doing well.
Yep, all good here.
Perfect. Now, I guess going in, it's obviously your former club as well, which is probably going to add a little bit of spice to, I guess, the weekend. Not just for you. This is a massive fixture, both in the context of just football in general in this country. I don't think fixtures get much bigger than this in our domestic game. But you've crossed the divide once, you cross that divide again. Before, I guess, we go into, I guess, the ins and outs and I guess how you're feeling in terms of making those move or making that original move and coming back, settling back into the Wanderers. A lot of familiar faces, I'm sure, for you, albeit a different coach. But how have you found the move back to, I guess, in a way, similar surroundings for you?
It's been pretty easy. I know, like you've said, pretty much most of the girls that were in the squad when I was first there at Wanderers. So it was a good feeling coming back, knowing them girls. It gave me like a little step forward in feeling comfortable in coming back. Robbie is also a very nice bloke. So, and I also knew Tom Samani from before that. So it was pretty easy to come back in, and I was very comfortable. And I did eventually move back in.
On Robbie Hooker as well, something that I guess has been kind of seen with him since coming into the Wanderers. This is obviously the first time in, I guess, a few years that the Wanderers have had a bit of consistency in their coaching department. Unfortunately, there's been a bit of turnover in their head coach role. But we saw last year, Harding was probably the best example of the level that he was able to take her and the improvement that we saw in her overall game just throughout the 2023-24 season. And even players like Kushiru, Holly Caspers as well. We saw them kind of take their game to a new level, as well as some other players around the pitch. But considering, and obviously Robbie was a defender in his heyday, so maybe it's a bit of a surprise that it's the attacking players that are really making that step up. But seeing how some of, I guess, Wanderers attacking players have transformed under him, what are you looking forward to, I guess, getting out of working with Robbie just on a personal and professional level?
Robbie is very, very good. He focuses on trying to play football. He doesn't want to be a team where you kind of just hit the ball, run. He wants to play football and teach us all how to, play tiki-taka like Barcelona or someone like that. But he's good for that sort of stuff. He's got his head screwed on, and he likes to coach everybody, not just the defenders, but even the attackers as well. He's very knowledgeable, and yeah, he's overall a good coach, and he gets his point across really well.
Just on that kind of style of play that I guess you're coming into, is that being different to, I guess, things that you've, I guess, been taught in the past as well? Not to say that you've been playing hoofball with other coaches, but have you seen, I guess, a different style with what he's trying to do in terms of, maybe playing, having to play a different role and adapt your own game? And is that something that you've taken well to?
Yeah, I think myself as a footballer, I am more of a tiki-taka sort of player, play with the ball. Robbie has come in and has said that in the previous years, the club hasn't kind of been about that, and he wants to kind of bring that in and show that we can play football, and he wants to keep the ball and get around teams that way. He just doesn't want one way of play. He doesn't want to always go over, but obviously there is times where you're going to have to play through teams or go around or play tiki-taka. So he wants to have more than one option, and he's been teaching us in our preseason, and yeah, which is something different to what he's done last year, because he said he's kind of working on that with our new players in the midfield this year, and trying to get that point across and start something new.
Linking up as well with, I guess, players I mentioned before, Rhew Harding. You've kind of, there's a front three there that, and Rhew and Harding, they had that chance to, I guess, develop that connection last year. And it was something Kusuru actually pointed out, speaking to Front Page Football every now and again, saying that the way that she's been able to work with Harding and that connection developing was beneficial for both of them, but particularly for Rhew. You're getting the chance to join that front three now. Is that something that you're relishing? And how have, I guess, you been able to connect with them, not just professionally on the football pitch, but as people as well, considering, or maybe connecting back with them, considering they were players while you were there at the club previously too.
Yeah, they're really nice girls. When I did leave and go across to Sydney, they were still in contact with me, and they were supporting me all the way, and I was supporting them as well. So we had a bond that was easier to come back to, and it was easier to work on with on the field as well. As soon as I came back, went in at training, and they know that I like to play with the ball at my feet and link up with players. So they're trying to do that more with me, but I'm also utilizing their speed, and they're both very good players, and they can get in behind defenses. So I'm looking to play balls over the top for them, and they're looking to come under for me. So we're just working off each other, which is good.
Looking ahead kind of to the derby this weekend, you were part of it last year. On the other side of things, I saw a stat from the A-Leagues today that the big last year's one was the biggest ever domestic women's football match in Australia, well over 10,000 people there. How do you think, like, what was that experience like, and how excited are you to play in another exciting game like that?
Yeah, so last season I got a glimpse of what it was like to be at a derby. Unfortunately, I didn't start the game, but I did come on in the last 10 minutes or so, and the atmosphere was amazing. There were so many people there, and it was something I've never played in before, which was very exciting but also nerve-wracking for me. And I feel as of this time around, it would be something that I would like to flourish in. And yeah, it's good. A lot of people are coming to more A-League women games, and it's good for all of us teams and us girls, getting the recognition that women's football needs. And yeah, it's just exciting to see a lot of people coming to games. And obviously at Leichhardt, there is also a lot of people that come there, and which is exciting. So hopefully this week will bring a lot of people.
Is there a part of you that's obviously a derby is not something that you need a bit of extra motivation for, but the chance to, I guess, play against your former club as well, is that something that you're relishing going into the weekend?
Yes, for sure. I've been waiting for this fixture for pretty much the whole pre-season since I signed with Wanderers. It's exciting. Obviously every game you want to play in, and you want to do well and win games for your club. But this is something that us girls look forward to even more than just a normal game. It's for bragging rights. It's for It's a very good picture, and it's exciting. And even on the men's side as well, you can see that there's a lot of passion, and it's great.
Having a look at the derby as well, Sydney, I think people may be surprised by their start of the season. Two losses from two for a club of that size, very, very unfamiliar territory for them. It's been a while since Wanderers have actually been able to get one better as Sydney FC in the derby. Going into this match, I guess the mentality for you girls as well, is there a part of you that are thinking that Sydney FC may actually be there for the taking this weekend?
Yeah, obviously, every time you go up in against an opponent, you're thinking you're gonna win. There's a chance for us to get results out of a game. But Sydney, as you said, has lost twice, and we actually haven't won a game either. We've drew one and lost one. So I think we're both looking for a win this weekend, and I think we're both going to come out firing. But I back our girls and our quality in our team to get this win over them this weekend. It'll be one. Like you said, in a while.
Just on your results as well, you do say you haven't won a game this season. You've had that one draw to Jets, the loss at home to Adelaide. The performances have been there to a certain extent, but it's just about tipping it over and making sure you're getting the 3 points consistently. And it has been a while since Wanderers have started a season on the front foot like that as well, and been, I guess, exceptional from the get-go. Is there a frustration building, I guess, in terms of not being able to get those results yet, or are you as a team and a collective still seeing those performances there and saying, well, there is something that we can build on here. Once we get one win, we'll build it on. It's just a matter of being confident and knowing that that's going to come eventually. What's the mentality of the squad like right now in that regard?
Yeah, I think that we think that we can build on things and take from our losses and bring them into wins and work on things. But obviously, there would be a bit of frustration in moments of the game where we have probably just switched off a little bit and let things happen. But there's things that we can fix, and as a team, we'll work together. And Robbie will get in with his staff and then chat to us girls, and we'll get on the pitch and work on them things to slowly get better at them, and eventually. When we do get our wins, we want to just keep going and going and going and keep working on the things that we do well, and then keeping working on the things that we also haven't done so well either.
Is there a bit of a rivalry with particular players in that Sydney FC side? Are there any girls that, before the game you'll be shooting a bit of a text to, revving them up, since they're your former teammates?
No, not really. I don't really have much rivalry with them. Obviously, I do speak to most of some of the girls there. I've known some of the girls from young Matildas and junior Matildas, so I've known them for a while. But now I'll probably just stay to myself on the day, and then once we get the win, I might send them a message.
Friendly banter, I would do love that a little bit. Looking at your time at Sydney FC as well, there's maybe an element that you probably didn't get the game time that you would have wanted out of that stint, but there was a chance to be part of a successful team, get a trophy under your belt, get a gold medal under your belt, chance to be an A-League champion. How do you look back at your time at Sydney FC and sum it up?
It was good being around some of the big names in Australia, Courtney Vine, Jada, Charlotte, Princess, all them girls. They're amazing people and even better players. So it was good to just be under them for a season and see how they work and how they go at the club. And then obviously we did end up winning the championship at the end of the year, and that was a bonus. So yeah. Game time, I didn't really get much of that, but just in training and stuff, I really learned a lot. And unfortunate that, yeah, I didn't get much game time, but that's what happens in football sometimes. And I just obviously had to make the best decision for myself and ended up switching back again.
Just on that, you mentioned there are the chance you do have the chance to train with quality players. You're learning under someone like Courtney Vine, which you'd be living under a rock if you don't understand the impact that she can have, especially at an A-League level. The chance to go through that and have that experience, as much as maybe there wasn't the game time and the actual on-field experience that you can get, but taking that experience and being able to take learnings from those players and come back to a squad where you can get that game time and you can have that impact on the first team. Do you feel like a rejuvenated player in a way?
Yeah, I do actually. I feel like last year, obviously everyone wants game time and everyone wants to play. It's what you train for. But just being able to see how they go about their days and weeks and how they train, and then now being able to go onto a field and take what I've learned from that last season and come and bring it onto the field, it gives me a bit of a step forward from other players, because I think obviously seeing how those top players perform and what they do day in, day out is something special and something that can help people go a long way and change things for yourself.
Annabelle, got anything you want to add?
Not really. I think you've covered most of it, I guess. Bit cheeky, but do you have a score prediction for the weekend?
2-1 to us.
Love that. Love the confidence. Just one last one from me before we wrap things up. The season ahead long term for Wanderers as well. Expectations, like I said, this is the first time that Wanderers as a football club have been able to go into a new season with a bit of consistency at the head coach role. A lot of players that you've been able to keep a hold of, the main turnover did come from, I guess, a lot of those visa players leaving as well as Alexia Apostolakis, I guess. But there was a core of the squad that did quite well for the side last year that has been able to be retained. You're part of the quality that's been added on. What's the expectations around this team? Where do you guys see yourselves finishing? Because there was that close run to finals last year. Is it about making sure that you do take that step and actually get into the top six this season? And if that doesn't happen, is there anything else you're looking for to show that there are signs of improvement, or is it basically finals or bust in a way?
Yeah, so obviously every team wants to make finals, but I feel like that's something that we're working towards, and every day at training, even in preseason, it was something that Robbie always spoke about, how they've lost their spot in finals by, I think it was 1 point. So yeah, we're pushing and he's pushing. He wants to get revenge on the clubs that kicked us out. But yeah, it's something that we want to work to, and we want to be playing finals footy and eventually going that step further, and something that Wanderers hasn't done in a couple of years, actually. So,
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time, Sienna. All the best for the weekend. And, we're meant to be impartial here, but hopefully for your sake, it is a good weekend for you.
thank you.
Guess to wrap this episode up now, and I do believe I've got my dates correct, and I do apologize to everyone if I don't, but I do believe before we record, there will be a squad announcement for the Matildas. Now, the next time the Matildas go out to play, they will be playing four matches. And I don't believe that there's going to be a long enough break from the European leagues that they actually can play, that our Matildas overseas can actually play all four matches, which means, and obviously this is going off a bit of theory, but either way, it is just going to be a little fun little conversation to end this podcast. There are probably going to be a few opportunities for some A-League women's players to step up into the Matildas and I guess show Tom Samani and whoever ends up being in that role permanently what they're capable of. My question to you two. Is there anyone that is in the league now that stands out and that you look at and go, I want to see them make a debut next month? Annabelle, you first.
I don't know. Part of me thinks it's a little bit too early to be calling out debuts. I don't know. I think last window, right, there were only four A-League players in the squad. And, lately there's almost been less and less A-League players in, the national team. I think it would be really exciting to get a few players in there just to kind of test them out. And we were talking, off air, Cody, about how, a couple of years ago, the Matildas travelled over to Europe with a quite a, inexperienced squad, bunch of debutants. They got smashed 5-0. And a lot of those players
7-0,
aren't
wasn't it?
still around.
Given the Matildas a bit of grace there.
Was it 7, was it? Oh, well, there you go. But they had some bad results. And whilst that group isn't still around, individual players proved themselves in a situation like that. So I do think there is some talent in the A-Leagues that could kind of step up to that. I think Melbourne City, there's a few players that have been there before, but maybe could come in again, like a Briley Henry, maybe. She's doing okay. I think other players,
Yeah, even if it's not necessarily debut, it's just generally anyone in the A-League that's not like a Matildas regular, I guess.
Well, I mean, she's a bit of a regular, but she missed the last squad is Alex Chidiac. I'd like to see her back in things, and maybe getting a chance to try and, play a few more minutes. But I think I want to see people prove themselves for maybe a month before I, name any debutantes.
Matt, you got anyone that you want to add?
Yeah, I think there is a very obvious answer to this question, but I'll also kind of speak to the sentiment there that I think Briley Henry's a good shout. Whether or not she's actually playing at the elite level required to get the call up, I think she's someone that you can definitely look at for quite a dependable future. And with what I'm about to say, I'm mindful of The fact that we don't really know what Tom Samani and or future manager, unnamed future manager, are going to look for in terms of a position where they actually want some young exuberant talent and where it actually fits into the mold of the types of teams that are selected. Looking forward to, the home Asian Cup. But Peter Trimas, to my knowledge, might have been called up for like a camp or two, but has not made that debut yet. Is
She hasn't
would
been
that be
called up
good?
to Matilda's camp, no.
No,
No, I
not
thought she
overseas.
had.
I don't think she's even made seniors camps. Oh. Well, I would put my money on Peter Trimas to be both a young talent and an exciting A-League talent to make the jump up. I think what she's been able to do to kind of come from, a relatively unknown teenager, as many do in the competition, to then actually be a really core part of that Mariners team in a really short time frame. Also, again, I know that the under-20s, under Leah Blaney kind of fell apart in Colombia, and talking to some of the players, that was an experience that everyone would collectively like to forget about. But she has been a part of those U20 teams, and I think for me just really stands out as someone, situation pending, that that could really fit in and mold herself as a national team player, someone ultimately that I think ends up getting a move outside of the competition as well.
So was that the really obvious answer, Peter Trimas?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not one I would have thought
I
of,
wouldn't have
actually.
gone with that for obvious, but I do think she's someone that's worth a shot because I think you need more youth coming through, especially in the camps. Like, you don't have enough youth getting involved and getting accustomed to the way that the senior team kind of play and prepare for games. I think there's a few of those young under-20s players that could potentially just, even if it's not a debut, but they're just involved with the squad, that could be really good for them, Up at Brisbane, Tish Woods could take some value from that. I think Alexia Apostolakis out of Melbourne City has always been strong when she's put in under 20 situations. Naomi Chinima has always been really strong and had, a higher level of maturity, which has been shown in her being awarded leadership positions in the past. But I think these are players that need maybe some time to just join the squad, maybe get a small debut, but I think just even just being a part of the squad, getting that experience, that could be really valuable to not only themselves but even just the Matildas, set up moving forward.
And forgive me, is this coming window the one where we're playing against Chinese Taipei?
And
Yeah.
Brazil.
Yeah, look, there's scope to have a bit of a punt against Chinese Taipei. I don't know if Chung Min is still the manager there. Terrific guy, by the way. Like, actually, the best experience I've ever had in a foreign camp is with that guy just shooting the breeze about everything. He's a very, very knowledgeable, very, very cool guy. If he's not the manager, well, firstly, that's really depressing. And my second thing to that is this Chinese Taipei team are going to get absolutely whooped. So with that in mind, really give that window for a lot of experiment and a lot of younger names coming in. So again, someone like a Peter Trimas, Riley Henry, I mean, the names are there for sure.
So my thinking was more around like around a Polisinas or Mackenzie Hawksby coming back in, like those real maybe
Yeah, okay.
genuine league leading players. Alex Chidake could put in there as well if you're talking about Smokey.
Maybe, but at the
I
same
guess
time, I think there's
you.
enough experience. We need some youth coming through.
Yeah, this is it. This is it. You've kind of aimed that at the question of senior player who is currently in the A League.
Oh look,
And I think Annabelle and I have heard that
I'm
and
not
gone,
specific,
okay,
man. I'm not
young
picky. Give me
players.
who you want.
Yeah. Well, fair enough.
I think there's enough senior players playing in Europe and enough players in that sort of age bracket that this might sound really harsh, but if you haven't proven yourself by now, give it to the younger person to have a go because, like I was saying to you off air, Cody, a lot of the current, Matildas who are, the country's favourites, they debuted at 15, 16, 17, as teenagers. And we aren't really giving many teenagers a shot anymore. So I'd like to see some young teenagers or early 20s. Like I know the game's evolved. You're not getting quite as many, 15-year-olds in it anymore, but some younger players like they just got Galichin, who I think, has been really deserving of that for a while. I'd love to see her play a big role in the next window. Winona Heatley just made her debut again. We're a bit light on depth at the centre back position before she kind of joined the fold. So it's nice to see her being blooded into the squad. So yeah, I'd like to see Tom Samardzija look towards youth rather than players who may have already been given a shot and didn't quite, make the most of it.
I guess if you're looking at that bracket, would you look at someone like Indiana Dos Santos then to maybe come in and at least get a feel for the environment?
Worth a shout.
It's a good show, exactly. My reaction's exactly the same. I mean, it's
It's funny because
definitely
she's
worth a
someone as
shot.
well. Like, if she has a really, really good season, you're talking about someone that probably actually could be a genuine Matilda considering her age profile and, I guess, her style of a footballer as well.
The one thing
She's
out
very
about.
similar to Gallic in that respect, like quite a similar player in terms of style. So there's no reason why she can't have a breakout season and find an overseas opportunity somewhere and keep building as a player.
But I also just think the one thing that you just said there that's really kind of etched in my mind is you're right in that the landscape has changed. It's maybe not every team will have the token, 14, 15, 16-year-old. But I still naturally think that that is the nature of the competition. The competition is there for those players to be the ones that get the opportunity far more primed than what they do in the male equivalent. And ultimately, when we talk about that step from the A-Leagues to Europe or the A-Leagues to Matildas, I'm still 100% on board with the fact that most of that core that's going to be called up are going to be a younger demographic. And I think so as long as the system stays like that, it will be a very healthy system because it will actually almost golden generation style in the men's, where the NSL was that poor in quality, they all up shipped to Europe when they were teenagers. If we make sure that the prime of your A-League career is when you are that young, that is going to build a second golden generation for the women, which, I just think that if they're smart about it, the A-League don't try and, have a potential talk about can we be one of the better leagues in the world and simply stick with let's go with what we're good at, which is a whole other conversation in of itself. But I just you, the language and the way you said that really kind of brings that point to mind.
I think that's where we'll wrap it up. For those that have listened today, thank you very, very much. We do all really, really appreciate it. Be sure to follow the socials, Front Page Football, Front PG Football on Instagram and Twitter. Matt, you can correct me if I do say any of these things wrong.
I'm not the
Facebook, Front Page Football, LinkedIn, Front Page Football. I think I've got all our socials covered there. Threads as well, if you're still on that. That did kind of die in the arse, though, unfortunately. Matt, Annabelle, you guys got anything you want to add?
I do actually, just on the topic of women's football, is the fact that there is nowhere
Fitting
in.
considering it's a women's football podcast.
Well, yes, that's it. But there is honestly, there is not a single space where I will get to discuss this, so I'm going to have my 5 minutes, all right? FIFA have expanded into women's futsal, which like is huge and a really cool opportunity. I have no idea what the infrastructure is like for women's futsal anywhere in Australia, if I'm just being honest. I'm someone who actively follows the code, and I haven't seen anything, so it mustn't be, totally popular. But obviously, the Philippines have been awarded hosting rights to the inaugural World Cup of it, which will be in late 2025, and the Asian Cup for qualification kicks in literally like a month and a half, 2 months for the start of that 2025 World Cup cycle. They're all going to do it in a calendar year, so start of the year is the qualification process, and then it kind of just works its way down. But because it's being hosted in the AFC has a huge window of opportunity. And again, I really wish I could speak on more expertise about the kind of the state of women's futsal, but I really can't. All I know is that we've got our qualification group, and just historically looking at some of these countries, both how they participate in women's sport, how they participate in futsal, it's a really, really big window of opportunity. I just had it in front of me and I just lost it. Give me 2 seconds. I do
One
this
thing
all
I'd like to
the
say on that
time.
aspect is I don't follow futsal super closely, but you hear rumors and you hear things. From what I've heard, A-League clubs aren't going to release any players who might be interested in playing for the futsal national team. I've heard some names pop around that were, in talks to maybe try and, take a break from the A-League contract to go and play at this futsal World Cup. But yeah, they're going to block any attempts from currently contracted A-League players.
Oh, like
Which,
Rana Polisena probably would have been really, really good for,
yeah,
wouldn't you?
Pauline. I heard Abby Lemon as well was really into it. She's a big futsal player.
I
Yeah, there might be
understand
other names.
what they're trying to do there in the sense that most of what fuels these other kind of codes of football, like the beach soccer and futsal, that all those programs that FIFA have, a lot of it is backed off kind of amateur players. And so the A-League as a result, albeit the A-League women is not as professional or as profitable as the competition as we want it to be, they still have that integrity to maintain. So I kind of understand where they're coming from in that respect. But I've got the group in front of me, okay? And this is pretty crazy in that we're actually in a group with the Philippines themselves, who FIFA anointed host. So there's going to be like an extra spot, even if we are pretty mid in the group. Outside of that, there's Kuwait, which, listen, we can chalk it up as a W. Turkmenistan, who, again, just Central Asia is an absolute hotbed for futsal. Uzbekistan just hosted the Senior Men's World Cup. I'm not going to say that Turkmenistan are going to be like terrible, but at the same time, it's the women's team, so I'm just not really going to put much stock in it. That automatically puts us third in a group with the Philippines, where we're going to get an auto spot to go to the Asian Cup, and Uzbekistan, who, okay, again, the women's program, they're probably not going to give as much stock to, but this is Uzbekistan, and like they live and breathe indoor sport. Like it's a really, really big deal. So I'm expecting us to probably finish second or third. Make the Asian Cup, which will be assume at some point in the midway through the year. But these games kick off on the 11th of January, and the girls will start the campaign playing against Turkmenistan. So between now and then, which is exactly 2 months, I am going to research as much as I can on this and come back on Dub Show, Front Page Dub, and just say, hey, give me my segment on women's futsal, because no one else in the country is going to be talking about these girls, and they deserve all of our support. Every department of the FA from top to bottom deserve our support. So yeah, bring it on.
Well said, Matt. Well said. Annabelle, you got anything you want to add?
I think I'm good. Yeah, excited for the season ahead.
Yeah, you don't have, sorry, you don't, you're not expected to go on the tangents that Matt does. That's
Not
that's
expected to
Matt.
prepare a little research project.
Don't need a preface or research project. That's just Matt and what he does. The look, it's a credit to, I guess, what we do at FPF. He sees the ins and outs of the national teams, and I guess the parts of the FA that maybe don't get prefaced, as well as what the senior national teams do, or maybe the major youth national teams. So we've got experts all around. That's why FPF is, I guess, your number one place for Australian football. What's the new slogan that we got, Matt? Live it, breathe it, something like that.
Living it, breathing it, injecting it. I don't know. It's something like that.
Sorry, Christian. Anyway, that's all we have time for, folks. Like I said, if you have gotten through this episode, one, I'm sorry. Two, thank you. We'll be back in a fortnight. I guess your favorite trio now, unless we have a bit more rotation. There'll be a few extra voices that you'll hear on the Front Page Dub podcast this year as we try and expand, I guess, what we do and the coverage that we're able to bring. So we'll see you in a fortnight. But until then, it's a bye for now.